Review. Let's look back across three portions very quickly. There's always a part that God would do, and then there's a part that we can do. So in Bereshit, we find out in the beginning, God creates. What happens? He creates a new creation. What happens in the first creation? He creates the universe, and by verse 4, Yehior. He says, let there be light, Yehior, Vayehior, and there was light. What kind of light is that? It's a mystery in a way. But the sun, moon, and the stars are created later. So this is sometimes thought of as the primordial light that was in Gan Eden before the fall. And it's a light yet to be revealed to believers. It's a light yet to be revealed when God does a new thing in Zion. For our part, we wait in faith. But when Yeshua came, John 1:9, in him was light, and his light was the light of man. Again, we have this discussion of light. The conclusion in the portion was rest in grace. And God, he spent 6 days creating, on the seventh day he rests from all his work. Man, called to walk in God's footsteps. 6 days, but the seventh day we don't really finish the rest. And the scripture never says, and there was evening and morning, the seventh day. And the Shabbat was never finished. So our conclusion is, if we're going to rest in grace, and grace is God's power to make things happen, and we're to rest, work hard and rest easy, on the seventh day, we should make every effort to be zealous, be eager to enter that rest. That's Hebrews 4:11. And it's a Shabbat rest that was held out to believers that maybe, as in the first generation, and as in the generation of the wilderness and others, people don't enter. Grace bestowed from God brings power. What do we see? We see redemption, sanctification, and glorification. Redemption in Colossians 1:12 and 13 were transferred from the authority of the kingdom of darkness to the kingdom of light. But what is that authority? Well, we're not under that authority anymore. Sanctification, holy ones are set apart to draw near, we're to abide in the light. And if you think of the Sinai idea, believers are called out of Egypt. The redemption is that we're freed from slavery in Big House, Paro. We go to Sinai, and if we ascend Sinai, we're on holy ground. The regular people are barred from being on holy ground. Why? There's not a sanctification. When there's not a sanctification, look out. The wrath of God can break out against you. So believers, in those days, the priests, the elders, they got up the mountain a little bit. Moses higher still, along with Joshua. Aaron and Nadab and Abihu, higher than the 70 elders that consummate the covenant. When they're looking at God's feet, they can see his feet like glass. And they have communion in his... they celebrate the covenant in his presence. Sanctification, then, is abiding, being able to stand on holy ground and be there. But it requires that we be clean. Requires that we dwell in the light. In glorification, God elevates his own to reflect his light. And if we don't glory in being in his presence after we abide in his presence, then that's where the path of grace is going to establish us. So he pulls us out into the kingdom of light. We're transferred, Colossians 1:12, 13. We're given the Holy Spirit. We're called to abide. The Spirit takes up residence in our house, teaches us ways of holiness and sanctification. And it's a lifelong pursuit. As we grow to abide in it, we get closer to the Lord. The effectual and fervent prayer of a righteous availeth much. If we're sanctified, we can expect more and more that we're praying the right categories and we're going to see answers to our prayers. Glorification, God will elevate his own to reflect his light. And what we'll see today is like Matthew 5:16, let your light shine before men, that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. So the emphasis is not, it shifts from us to the Lord. It's not on our works. But there's two things playing out. If we have works, we can boast in the Lord. But when we boast in the Lord, we're really letting our light shine. And when we let our light shine, people might be seeing our works, but what are we doing? If our light is shining, it's not because we're in dialogue with them. It's because we're glorifying our God that's in heaven. So again, it's His story. So creation, the idea is, the story is not about you. The story is not about what you can do for God. The story is about abiding in the light. The story is being redeemed, transferred into the kingdom of light. The story is abiding in the light. And the story is an ascending. As we ascend, we become increasingly sanctified. And as we ascend and become increasingly sanctified, we draw near. As we draw near, we switch positions from the Amha'aretz to the elders, to the priests, to Moshe and Behar. We're on the mount. We're in the presence of the Lord. And when we're there, we can glory in His presence. But you know, you don't shortcut that. You don't just say, I'm going to learn how to worship and then glory in His presence. You're only going to do that a few hours a week. You're only going to do that a pittance of your life. The question is, what are you doing for most of your life? And that's what you bring to the table when you worship. Otherwise, you're putting the cart before the horse, because you have to pay to play. And under God's grace, you have to be redeemed and sanctified before you're going to be glorified. Otherwise, you can glory in the Lord, but He's going to say, sit down in the back, or I never knew you, or something else. So this is important. Days of Noach, then, we're told Messiah will return. And our first word was Spudazomen. Can you say that?
Spudazomen.
Spudazomen. We should make every effort, be zealous, be eager to enter that rest. Hebrews 4:11. So that rest has to do with Shabbat being the sanctified edge of our lives. We set that apart to rest in grace, and then we work hard and rest easy. And when we learn to rest in grace, then the light that comes from the Shabbat and the time that we take when we're in God's face, that's when we radiate in holiness. That's when we're transformed from image to image, 2 Corinthians 3:18. That's when we're remade into the new man, going from one glory to the next. And if Shabbat's our leading edge and we hasten to enter it, then He's going to change us. And that's what happens. We rest in His grace. We don't change ourselves by saying, I'm going to be sanctified. That's the you show again. And the you show isn't what the story is. The story is God's story and what He's doing. And if you think you can do, then you got it backwards. And if you think you can sanctify yourself again, you got it backwards. The Holy Spirit is residing in you, and all you really can do is quench it and get it out of your temple. That's what you can do. And we do that frequently. So the question becomes, how do we become God-centered, and how do we begin to learn God's way of approaching things? The days of Noah, Messiah said He'd be coming back, and Messiah was asked, when is that going to be? And He says, no one knows, not even the Son. If He doesn't know when He's coming back, what makes you think you can go to some eschatologist around here and get an answer on when this time and the season is so that you're going to be ready? And if you knew He was coming back, you wouldn't be any more prepared than the demons that know when He's coming back. Because what you believe is different than what you believe in. And how sanctified you are, this has more to do with how prepared you are than whether you know or don't know that He's coming back. Knowledge of is different than knowledge about. And to get concerned with knowledge about is to go on the wrong. It's not to read this verse when He says, be vigilant. He says, be vigilant, be ethically prepared. Grigorite. So let's say grigorite.
Grigorite.
Keep vigilant, therefore, for you do not know in what hour your Lord comes. Matthew 24:42. But the people that are vigilant, it says, over all His property He will set him. So the Lord is going to make a steward. He's going to make an Eliezer of Damascus out of you in Abraham's house. He's going to make an Eliezer of Damascus of you. He's going to point you over all His property if you're vigilant, if you're waiting. Because you're the guy that's going to sound the alarm. You're the guy that's going to be ready when everybody else is asleep. The disciples weren't vigilant. They were falling asleep when they came to get Yeshua. It's easy not to be vigilant. And what do you do about it? He told them to be vigilant. They went to sleep. Why? Hour of darkness. Again, you see, if you're not abiding in the light, it's not going to be enough. You're going to fall asleep. You're going to be under the power of darkness. You're not going to be transferred under the power of light. So you have to be sanctified. And when you're sanctified, then you're abiding in light. And when you're abiding in the light, you're going to be vigilant. You're going to see. By your light, we will see light. Psalm 36:8-11. So you want to become transformed under the image and glory of God. We come to Lech Lecha, walking in saving faith. And our word there, stichusin. Stichusin, can you say it?
Stichusin.
Stichusin is to march in file. It's a military term. And what happened is Abraham is going to walk across with his dad for a while. They're going to go from Ur over to Haran, the crossroads of faith, and then Haran, they're going to cross the Euphrates, they're going to come down to the Promised Land. Abraham's going to do this, Sarah's going to do this, they're going to send back to the old country and get Rivka, she's going to come do this, they're going to send back and get Leah and Rachel, they're going to come do this. Everybody's going to walk in this walk of faith. And the guys that get hung up along the way, like Terach, he's going to stay in Haran, he's going to die in Haran, Abraham's going to leave him when he's 70, when he's 145 and live in the Promised Land 75 years, his father's going to die. But meanwhile, the scriptures are going to say, he died at the age of 205, and then God said to Abraham, Lech Lecha, and he's 70. His father's 145 at the moment. Scripture already told him he died, but he really isn't going to die for another 60-some-odd years. What is happening is his faith walk has stopped, and he's as good as dead. And it's just a matter of time, and then he's dead. And then he's really dead. But he was spiritually dead before that. So when do you pronounce him dead? When he's spiritually dead or when he's physically dead? The walk is a faith journey. When your faith dies, you die. That's it. You cease to abide at that point. Because your mortality isn't locked up in the flesh, and it isn't locked up in the moment. It's locked up in the faith. Three things abide: faith, hope, and love. And the greatest of these is love. That doesn't mean faith isn't great. It means these are the things that are going to last. And when Terach's faith gives out because he sells out for commerce and he's an idol maker and he doesn't complete the journey, even though God told him in Ur, you're going to go, take your family and go where? To Canaan. And he's told, go to Canaan. He gets hung up along the way, sidetracked, out. Abraham continues the journey. That's the end. And Abraham later, Avram, will become Avraham. That's in this port. That's in this portion. No, Al-Hamon Goyim. It's in this portion. In Lech Lecha. He's gonna do that. So he's gonna walk in the footsteps of and Paul's gonna come back in Romans 4:12 and he's gonna say to Abraham, Al-Hamon Goyim is the father of circumcision to those not of the circumcision only, but also to those who stichusin, walk in the steps of the uncircumcised faith of our father Abraham. And so you've got two things playing out. You've got Abraham walking in faith, but when he's walking in faith, he's uncircumcised, and you get to Genesis 15:6, and at that time, it's called the covenant between the parts. It's like, what is it? The Brit Ben Betari, covenant between the pieces. Genesis 15:6. Abraham's going to go down there, and God's going to have the smoking torch in the oven pass between these two pieces. Abraham's going to be holding on to this turtle dove that he doesn't kill, and a fledgling. And the turtle dove and the fledgling. Turtle dove is a good parent because if the divorce loses a spouse, anything else, it does not remarry. It stays loyal for life, and when it says, till death do us part, it not only says till death do us part, it says even after death we don't part. That's turtle dove. Abraham's standing with a turtle dove while God's with the smoking torch giving him the guarantee that he's going to give him this land and he's going to give him the descendants like the sea, like the stars and the sands. And he's going to give him and Abraham believes, and once Abraham believes, He knows that God is going to provide. So this is defined by Paul as saving faith in Romans 4:12, but it's a faith for the circumcision and for the uncircumcision. And yet, look when it's occurred. He says, Abram. He says, Abram says to him, I don't have any seed. You know, Eliezer of Dameshek is the servant over my house. I'm going to, the steward over my possessions is going to be a Canaanite guy. He's going to take it because I got no seed. And then God says, well, look at the Milky Way and count it, so shall your seed be. And he takes him outside. And he believed him, so he says he trusted in. This is he'amin b'. Not just he'amin. The demons he'amin. I believe God is God. Well, so what? I worship God. I believe in God. I believe in God's character. I believe in God is who he is and that he can do the things that he's going to do, and I trust him. That's having the birth. So Abraham has this relational belief, and God turns it around and says he deemed it to him as tzedakah, righteous merit on his part. 15:6. And so Abraham's accounted righteous. And when is this? This is when he's uncircumcised. This is when he doesn't know he's going to have a kid with Sarah. That's Genesis 17. This is when he doesn't know that God's going to ask for that kid to go be bound in the Moriah. And he's going to get him back from the dead, maybe. He doesn't even know that he's going to have this kid with Sarah. So what is deemed to him righteous while he's on this spiritual journey with God in the promised land? And yet this is saving faith. And it's a walk. He's left Ur and he's left his father. God said, Lech Lecha, go start a household. Where? To a land I'll show you. He's there. He doesn't have an heir. He's going to go start a household. He says, well, what is going to happen? I'm 99 years old here. You know, nothing. He's not 99 yet. He's 75. He's going to be 86 and have Ishmael. He's going to be 99, and God's going to say, it's going to be out of your loins now. And they're going to laugh their guts out. So he doesn't know. But he believes. He believes in. He believes God's good for it. He just doesn't know how it's going to happen. So we come to today, Vayera. And at this point, when the portion opens, Abraham is sitting there circumcised. His whole household is circumcised. It's the third day. He's in immense pain. The program has come to a halt. And what do you know? Theophany. God's going to pick his time and place when he comes to visit you, and it's not going to be on your terms, and it's not going to be on your schedule. Again, the story is about... And you want to show hospitality? Where are you going to be tested on hospitality?
Oh, after you've been circumcised on the third day.
Now we'll find out what you are, what you're made of. Well, God, I was in a bad mood that day. You bet you were in a bad mood that day. You were in the worst mood of your life that day. So these are the kind of values that you've got to build into who you are. You can't just believe. It's much deeper than that. He cares about who you are. Not what you do, who you are. And then who you are. He cares about his story and fitting you into his story. That's who God is. And otherwise, you know, you wouldn't expect him to be God. I mean, how would you act? If you were God and you're looking at some ant walking around the planet that you created, and the ant saying, well, what did you even be, man? What would you do with that ant?
Call the uncles.
Yeah, you drop him out of a plane somewhere, right? Let him go for a journey. The ant falls for 30 minutes and hits the ground. He's fine. Guy's made of armor plated. So, today, we're going to have two things that are playing out. You got this saving faith idea. And in Genesis 15:6, the saving faith is God is going to create ex nihilo out of your loins, something that doesn't exist. Saving faith is ex nihilo, out of nothing faith. How does God create the universe? Ex nihilo. What does he do? He breathes light into nothing. He pulls light out of nothing. He creates out of nothing the universe, and then he starts, let there be light. It's ex nihilo stuff. Out of nothing, he makes. It isn't, there was always matter here, and now with the matter, we're going to make something. That's like saying matter preceded God or something. I mean, it's like, there was nothing. And then there was the heavens and the earth. And then what? He starts pulling things out of what's already put in there when he created the whole thing out of nothing. Ex nihilo. And the saving faith, he goes over to Sarah and Abraham. He goes, now's the time you're going to name him Abraham. And Sarah, you're going to be named Sarah. You're going to be Sarah. You're going to be named Sarah, princess of God. Put my name in there. Why? Because inside I'm going to create some ex nihilo. I'm going to rejuvenate you, rejuvenate her. And by the way, you know, and if you read it carefully in the Hebrew, he waltzes them. He's not such an old man. Hey, you guys can get it together. Hey, it'll work out. He waltzes them in verse 12. Genesis 18, 12, whatnot. So he omits things. When she says, well, out of that old man, he says, well, out of him, you know. He's not that old man. He drops out some of this vocabulary so they can waltz each other. And what does he do? They got to come together and cohabit. Why? Because they're going to create something. Why? Because they're co-partners. And as part of saving faith, you're going to create something out of nothing. So, okay, you got this Genesis 15:6 faith at work. Now, Abraham's circumcised at this point, and it's 24 years maybe later, maybe 29 years from age 70, if the tradition's to be believed, with the covenant between Betharim, the covenant between Betharim, between the pieces. He's got this animals, he's got three animals that he cut in half, and then the torch and the oven are going through in Genesis 15:6. And at that time, he says, here's what I'm going to do for you. I'm the one that brought you out of Ur of the Chaldeans. This is when he and his father were on their way to give you this land to inherit. It's going to sound the same way with the Exodus and with the covenant. I'm the Lord that brought you out of Pharaoh's house, out of Egypt. Same stuff. But he said, my Lord, how do I know I'll inherit? He said, get me a calf at three, she-goat at three, ram at three, totaled up in a fledger. He puts him in deep. Boom. This is why I'm going to give you. And then he says, by the way, they're going to go down to Egypt 400 years. I'm going to go do it all over again, fourth generation. They'll come out, it's 100-year generations. And Abraham believes him, and because of that, it's reckoned as righteousness. Now, in Genesis 18, he shows up. Sarah's standing there. He talks to her. He says, you didn't really do this, you know. You don't really believe so much. I didn't laugh. Yeah, you laughed. He cares about the intention and the heart and the relationship and what you believe. And he's showing, man, I'm operating on the inside here, you know. I'm giving Edna moisture to Sarah so she can have a kid. I know her mind. I know your mind. I know everybody's mind. Call him Yitzhak. Personify the laughing faith that comes from believing. That belly laugh you had when you just laughed your guts out because you were so happy that it really was Sarah, your mate, that's involved. It's from her loins and your loins. And you're going to be 100 years old and, you know, you already know Shem had a kid, Arpachshad, at the age of 100 after he stepped out of the ark. And you know you should have figured it out that I'd wait till, you know, 100. That was 10 generations of when the guy's still alive right now. And he's going to go attend the bris of Isaac. And Shem and Abel are going to run an academy, and Isaac's going to study there. And Jacob's going to study there when he splits from Esau in Vayetzeh. That's what the tradition's going to tell us. You do the numbers, and these guys are around that long. So he's laughing his guts out because he says, hey, I should have seen it coming. I should have known it would have really been my mate. I should have really known God would do it in his timetable. I should have known the stories about him. I should have known the life from the dead, you know, really meant, you know, a dead womb, and he would have worked it out, and I should have waited on there, and I got this Ishmael. Would that Ishmael would live? Yeah, but he's not the kid of the promise. Okay, I get it. It's your story, not mine. All right. And call him Yitzhak while you're laughing. He laughs. So you got the personification of laughing. Now, this is the Toronto blessing. Mm-hmm. Where those guys turn into hyenas and laugh. This living faith is rational. It knows who God is and it believes God. They're real things in real life. When we have tongues in Acts 2, they're speaking in real languages. Cappadocian, Elamite, everybody's hearing God being praised in their own language. These are guys coming up from all over the world and they're standing there, the disciples who were a bunch of hillbillies, all of a sudden got Elamite and Cappadocian accents and they're speaking praise the Lord and everybody hears it. These are real languages, real stuff that happens. And the kind of stuff that stands the test with human nature in the real world, just like today. And it doesn't depend on something beyond what can be accomplished with man. And So you got saving faith going on here. And when you've got saving faith going on here, I'm gonna string together just to show you how some of this theory of how cards are dealt. When I say a card is dealt, I go, play that card to Abraham. Yeah, well, he's the patriarch. They're going to play that card later to somebody else, too. Oh, yeah? Yeah, it's an event, and it's going to be copied. Why? Because when the tests come along and the past experience, if Abraham experiences a patriarchal head, Israel's going to have to experience it as a country, and the Gentiles with the Jews are going to have to experience it as a people. These cards are played. We're going to revisit these things. And Abraham's got a little microcosm, a little world where he has a whole thing play out, and then that thing's going to be played out over a lifetime. In fact, over the life of humanity. And it's going to be played out in Israel's life, and it's going to be played out in the world's life. And in Israel's life, it's going to be all the Jews and the 12 tribes of Israel. And in the world, it's going to be played out Jew and Gentile and on a global scale. And when it's played out in Israel, then it's going to go into the scripture and it's going to be read across generations for thousands of years. When it plays out in the Gentiles and the Jews, that's going to be read for thousands of years. When this stuff plays out, boom! That's a card. Well, that card isn't just being played out to this guy. It's being played out in your life, too. Everybody gets the cards dealt. God cares about the shape of your head. He cares about every hair on your head. And He's keeping track of everything. He knows who your father is, who your father's 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 father is. He knows your clans. He knows how He's going to put this whole thing together. And it's going to fit in paradise. And it's going to fit in the millennium. And it's all going to make sense. Because He's been generation after generation paying attention to everything. And every loving detail crafted together perfectly. While we walk around with blinders on, thinking about 20 years at a time, and thinking the stories about us. And meanwhile, He's putting it together like, hey, Abraham, I got 4 billion people that know who you are. Now, how did I do you good with a few kids? You had one kid, Isaac. You had two other kids, Jacob and Esau. And they were the sibling rivalry. They almost did Cain and Abel run out of town when they're teenagers, kill each other. And you watch that drop dead. And then they bury you before Jacob comes back. You're gone. What did you see? You never saw Jacob at the 12 tribes of Israel. You never saw a nation. You never saw nothing yet. God's good for His promise. You believe it? Yes! That's faith. Saving faith. You believe it? Yes! You put your life on the line for it? Yes! You put Isaac on the line? Yes! You have everything summed up in Isaac? Yes! And you know, He's going to be a kingmaker. He's going to have Judah. Judah's going to have Jesus. They're going to have a nation each nation of the world. You're going to have a millennium? Yeah! What's the name of the nation?
I don't know.
Jacob. You know? I didn't get the name changed. I wasn't around. I died. I saw the promise from afar. It looked to me like Cain Abel setting up all over. After Arpach shot, it looked like his unwinding sibling rivalry, and then Cain Abel. And the guy ran out of town, and I died. They were 15, 17 years old. They got him, ran out of town when he was 63. I saw it setting up maybe when he was 15. Maybe the guy stole a birthright. Sold a birthright. They didn't look the same. I don't know. I wasn't paying too much attention. I died. I was paying attention. It didn't happen. This is Abraham's life. And God's going to pop in and say, well, you know, the last 2,000 years, people have been talking about you every day, and everybody's going to be like glistening in their eyes going, you, Abraham! And you're the most hospitable person on the planet. You're going to want to be eyeball to eyeball with every single person, because when you were circumcised on day 3, you jump out of your socks to feed God. And you were built to be the most hospitable person on the planet. And that's why your name went from exalted father to father of a massive nations. Because you're big daddy for everybody. You get a picture here? This is the Abraham card. God's building the millennium, and it's going to be perfect for everyone, starting with Abraham. So I thought it was going to be perfect for Jesus. It's going to be perfect for you, too. Perfect? Yeah, the whole thing is going to fit. Well, the question is whether you're going to be least or greatest in the kingdom. Because if you're greatest, it's all going to fit for you. And if you're least, it's still going to fit for you. It's like taking a course, pass, fail, and get a C-. So that passed, man. You feel good about it? Yeah. How about the guy who got an A+? Well, he learned a little more. Yeah, we're the same. That's the way it's going to be. And one guy passed and he's happy, and the other guy gets A+, he's happy. And the fit is perfect for everybody. And they get what they put into it. And the guy that's least in the kingdom is going to fit just fine for him. But you know, he's probably going to be sitting there kicking himself that he didn't know more. But he's not allowed to cry about it, because God's going to wipe away every tear. That's what's going to happen in the light. You can't cry, you're going to be in the darkness, you'll be out. Well, don't think you're going to stop yourself from crying. You're going to cry plenty, and that's going to get beat out of you in this life. And then what? You'll see. Life from the dead and everybody put together, and you'll start finding out you're part of a clan, and everybody like you acted exactly the same way for 20, 30, 40 generations. And you'll be talking to them, yeah, well, what happened when that happened? I did the same thing you did. Yeah, you said Uncle Jay did that. Yeah, Laban did it to me. Well, who did it to you? Everybody got Laban in their life, and so on and so forth. And you're looking, and you'll be a total, the same guy as 20, 30 guys before you. And you'll be like making sense out of this. I can't believe it. All of us did the same thing. Yep, look at us. All of us! Yeah, we even look alike. I had no idea. I looked exactly like some guy who lived four generations ago. And that guy's going, yeah, there's like 1,000 people who look like me. It's out there. Look out. Especially when they get the remade glorified bodies. You won't believe it. So, here's the thing. You believe. What do you believe? You believe in God. You believe in God that he's good for. What's he good for? Well, for Abraham, he's believing that he's good for being, making him the father of a mass of nations, like a millennium with the Messiah ruling and the kingdom of light established. Meanwhile, he saw nothing in his life. Nothing. He bought a cave for Sarah after she died. Paid full price for it. Got gouged by the Canaanites. Paying full price. That's the next portion. He's happy to pay full price to get gouged. It's a massive amount of money he paid. Like 20 years of work. He didn't care. Got to get a hold of what counts. You know, Hebron, where they're still talking about it today. Yeah. So, he's going along here. You've got saving faith, and the saving faith is that before he's circumcised, he believes in the program. And what's the program going to tell you? Nations. Nations are coming out of this. I'm going to give you all this land. You're going to have the land of all these tribes. And he gives them like the seven tribes, the seven Canaanite tribes. Then he changes Sarah's name and he says kings are going to come out of her. He hears this. He got a picture here. We're talking about nationhood. This guy never had a kid. Oh, I'm going to have nations. I'm going to be... You know, today... They bring over a psychiatrist and they lock you up. You think you're going to have, you know, Israel and you're going to be in charge of the Middle East and, you know, you're going to have kings and everybody's going to claim Abraham. And they do today. But if you'd have said that back then, psychiatrists today, they'd absolutely lock you up. Now, this is part of saving faith. You've got to believe something that's absurd. You've got to believe God for the impossible. And not only that, you shouldn't live so long. And he will. He will. He's going to die before he sees anything. Yeah, but he's going to come back to life. He's going to be in the firstborn of the resurrection. He's going to strut around for 1,000 years in the first resurrection. When the millennium's going on, when Messiah's in, when the throne's set up, and when the kingdom of light begins to take over the kingdom of darkness. He's going to strut around for 1,000 years. And I had the little thing I put on the tape last week, and I got corrected, right? Because it's like, I said 300 people. I wanted to be conservative. He's going to see 300 people a day. But I made the mistake of saying there's liable to be 1 billion people. And if there's 1 billion people that he's going to visit, he's going to have to visit 3,000 a day. And you know something? That's like Acts 2 every day for Abraham. 3,000. Up another day. 3,000 more. Up another day. 3,000 more. How long are you going to do this, Abraham? 1,000 years every day. What are you going to do? I'm going to meet every last one of my children. Why? Why? Did you live the way I lived? I had two guys fighting. I was waiting for all this. You think I'm going to get tired after a week or two? You think I'm going to get tired? I jumped up and served God when I was circumcised. I'm made for this. I have to do it. It's who I am. I got to wake up every day and do it. You don't get excited about Acts 2? The next day you say, well, now what? What do you want, a spaceship?
Acts 2, what happened in Acts 2?
3,000 came to the Lord in one day. So when Abraham visits 3,000 people, Acts 2. He watched 3,000 of his grandchildren come to the Lord. And when he walks around the planet, he's a nice nomad. That's what he was. And he tents the entire earth, and he meets all his grandchildren, his great-great-grandchildren, all billion of them.
Is that corollary to 15:6 Genesis?
Yes. He believed them for kings and the nations and going to take over the world.
Is this during the millennium?
Yes.
Christ's millennial reign or the Yeshua's millennial reign, or is this thereafter?
I'd say it's. You don't think the dead are going to come to life? When Jesus died, what happened?
People got up out of the graves and started walking.
I wonder why they did that!
Now, the people that got up out of the graves, were these people who were people of faith?
That's what it says. The Old Testament saints appeared to many.
Saints, okay.
Well, gee, I thought they only had saints with the Catholic
then what
Church.
What happened?
Boy, you know, it's the whole thing again, you know. Saints means sanctified. Hagios is the Greek word. Means holy. Holy means set apart. When you're sanctified, you're set apart to be God's property. You're set apart, you're transferred to the kingdom of light. You abide in the kingdom of light. When you abide in the kingdom of light, you're under the lights. When you're under the lights, you're being sanctified.
You're throwing books all over the place.
Throwing everything all over the place. Terrible. Shouldn't do that under the lights.
You're really under the light there, too.
You've seen the light.
Yeah, I gotta see the light.
Shining off your glasses right now.
So, what happens this round is we're gonna glory in saving faith. You see, when people say, let your light shine before men, that doesn't mean convince somebody rationally what work you're doing for God and open their eyes so they can see it. That's what you're going to do. That's not what it means. Let your light shine before men so they can see your good works and glorify you who are working for God. That's what that would mean. That's not what it says. It says, let your light shine before men that they might see your good works and what? So they don't care about the works. It's on your light. Let your light shine so they let their light shine. If you get sidetracked with works, you're down here thinking about your story. We're talking about the kingdom that's invisible. We're talking about your light shining. That's invisible. This light's invisible. You know what it is. I know what it is. It's invisible. When it shines, you know it's shining. Bring in a psychiatrist. He doesn't know it's shining. Go to court. Prove it. He'll say you're nuts. Then they'll say, you know, we noticed his pupil dilated a little. They call that shining light. Guy's nuts. Lock him up. He thinks the soul is the window, the eyes are the window to the soul, and that when his eyes are a little more lit up, that you know, he's shining. Lock him up. Put him with Abraham, who thought, you know, he's going to own the Middle East. Guys are nuts. Nuts. Because, you know, when you're a little out of this world, you can be a little in God's world. If you're allowed out of this world, they're going to lock you up and you're going to be with all the guys that know Jesus and have met him personally. So you got to get this. It's all got to do with degrees. You're going to wind up right where you're going to wind up. And it's all cut real fine. I'm saying glory and saving faith, and I'm saying believe upon with great joy. Believe upon God and what he's doing. Believe upon his story with great joy. Not just believe upon. Believe upon with great joy. It's like Abraham laughed. Yitzhak is a laughing guy. It's like when you see God's story, it's like get into it with God. It's like leave the earth a little bit. Now don't do it too long or they'll lock you up. Don't do it too long because you don't have a one-on-one with God right now, like, you know, he's your personal audience. But live for that. The priest has got his face to God first. Your first response has got to be check in. Your first response has got to be in the kingdom of light. Your first response has got to be boast in the Lord. Your first response has got to be let your light shine. When your light shines, you're boasting in the Lord. But your eyes aren't on the person, are they? What are they on? If they're not on the Lord, then you forgot the first lesson, that the story is about him, not about you. And the minute you do that, you're not a priest, and you're finished. Get off the mountain. The priest is looking up at God at that moment. And if you're looking at the audience, you're trying to do something, you're rational, you're watching darkness, you're trying to do something for God, you're trying, then you're in the mirror of righteousness, and you're nuts. Because you're leveraging the world, and you got an end mean reversal where you're doing something for God like you can do something for him. And you got it backwards. He's doing it for you. And you got backwards that you're not on a grace ride anymore. And you got backwards you're not resting in grace anymore. You're working in grace. And grace and works don't go together. Resting goes with grace. You got to rest in grace. Why? Because God's doing all the work when grace is at work. And by faith you're saved. What? Through grace. Mm-hmm. Don't forget grace.
Certain types of merit righteousness though can be quite useful.
It was accounted unto Abraham righteous merit for believing in. No, I'm not saying not to do that, but I'm saying Abraham didn't have a clue what the story was when he had that righteous merit.
So he leaned in that direction.
He didn't have a clue what the story was. When God reckoned up him as righteous, he didn't believe a thing about getting Jesus from the dead arisen.
What did he know?
All he knew is God just told him he's going to have a kid. And that kid is going to have nations and kings are going to come out of him. That's... He didn't even, you know, he barely knew that.
No,
you know, he's going to have a lot of people that are going to take over Canaan. He knows he's going to have that.
I'm more interested in Isaac.
And where it's going. He wants the story. He's not just living for Isaac. He already had Ishmael. Get it straight. And he said, would that Ishmael would live. Would that this promise would be for Ishmael. He didn't even want Isaac at that moment. He cared about Ishmael at that moment. And God said, Ishmael will have his 12-tribe confederacy. Now, in this Vayera portion, the Maftir is going to end with Nahor, who's Abraham's brother, getting a 12-tribe confederacy. And he got 8 and 4. 8 from the wife and 4 from the concubine. And Jacob's going to come along 2 generations down the line and have 8 from the wives and 4 from the concubines. Now, while you're at it, the 8 from the wise are going to include Bethuel, who's our real Napoleon type. He's a J.P. Morgan type. And he's got a daughter, Rivka. And Rivka's going to be Sarah's replacement. And next week we'll see that when the life of Sarah begins, and Sarah knocks off in one verse, two verses, and then the life of Sarah's lived. But by the next generation, and Rivka will get the Sarah card. And we'll see the life of Sarah continuing. But right now I'm talking about Abraham card. And I want to tell you, these cards get dealt out across generations, and I want to tell you that blessings get passed along, solved problems get passed along, what have you done for me lately, God? Curses get passed along, sins of the fathers get passed along, and you get everything. And you don't know it because values are caught and not taught. And so you're walking along, and you got a cold before you know it, and you got your gene structure before you know it, and you got your name before you know it, including your last name, and you are branded. And before you know it, you're in a box. And you've got no idea what kind of box it is. You're going to figure it out. And if it's Jewish, Jewish. And if it's stupid, stupid. And if it's tall, tall. And if it's strong, strong. And if it's fast, fast. Whatever it is, you're going to get it. And your father got it and he passed it to you. And most of your stuff is going to be, that's your starting point. And then you're going to get all the good and the bad, and you're going to get the card, and you're going to get the life events, and then you're going to plan. And you're going to think it's all random, and meanwhile, it's all cooked up. And at the exact time that you're supposed to meet and marry somebody, you will. The exact time you're supposed to get an important job, you will. Everything's going to occur exactly on God's schedule. It's all fated that way. But what walk you choose, a road you choose, and it'll open up divine appointment after divine appointment after divine appointment. You go on one path or another path. And if you go on this path and you get off, they'll bring you right back to that place before you go on that path some more. That path is all put together. And all that's not put together is how many tangents you're going to take, how much you're going to screw up before you figure out you're supposed to be on that path again. And you wind up back in the same place, and the card gets dealt exactly the same card that got you off in the first place, and you're going to get through that again. And that's why these cards are going to get played. Because you inherit the problem, and if you don't solve it, the next guy inherits the problem. And if you partly solve it, and you go off on a tangent, then when you get back there, they're going to give you that card again. And you're going to get to play the card again and again until you get through it.
Could you use that for the people that are in these nations on the planet now?
Absolutely. You.
Say,
you.
This is what the
you.
Nation is.
You. You. And it stops there. You and how you fit into God's story. Period. We're going to look at other people, we're going to look at people in the Bible only. And after that, you can figure out what card they're getting. But we'll take it from the Scripture. Because they're the starting point, and they're the patriarch, and they're the guy that dealt the card out to us. And they precede us, and we respect that. And we understand it, because we're putting it together where we came from in order to understand where we're going to. And God's got something he wants the whole human race to do, and other guys have already done it. But we got to do it. Because our generation has to do it. If we don't, punt. Next generation gets it. And if they don't, punt. And you want to postpone Yeshua coming back for 2,000 years? Keep punting. He'll wait you out. He's got nothing but time. So, glory and saving pay. Bleed upon with great joy. Look what happens here. I'm going to give you 3 verses to show you 3 cards. Same card. Somebody read Genesis 18:10. But here's the story. Angel, fear not, bear a son, name, king, God is given to her, departs. Here's the card. Just a series of events in life. Routine. What are the routine? Angel, fear not, name, somebody's going to be born, king, God guarantor, departs. And it's creation ex nihilo, it's saving faith, because the name is going to be some kid that never was, to some barren person that never could have. Ex nihilo, saving faith, because that kid is going to be a father to Jesus. And Jesus doesn't get born until that card gets played and passed on.
That card gets played a lot in a lot of people's lives.
Duh. All of these cards get played a lot. So here it is. Genesis 18:10. Somebody read it.
He said, I will certainly return to you around this time next year. And Sarah, your wife, will have a son. Sarah heard him from the entrance of the tent behind him.
That was all 18:10?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, you get what happened here? What's the story here?
Well, read that again.
Go ahead.
He said, I will certainly return to you around this time next year, and Sarah, your wife, will have a son. Sarah heard him from the entrance of the tent behind him.
Now, who's talking?
To the Lord.
See? Spiritual encounter, theophany, right? Okay. The half Torah. 2 Kings 4:16. We're just doing a Torah, a half Torah, and the Brit Chadashah portions are in the reading cycle. Just one verse, no problem. Just a card, saving faith, no problem. 2 Kings 4:16. And somebody want to get ahead of the stack, or go to Luke 1:31.
I figured it was going to be close to
that. Yeah, well.
Yeah, it doesn't have to do with Miriam, does it?
You're a genius.
Yeah, I figured that one out.
See, you're starting to think.
2 Kings 4:16. And didn't, you're right.
Well, about this time next year.
You're missing it, David. Here's the card.
About this time next year, Elisha said, you will hold a son in your arms. No, my lord, she objected. Don't mislead your servant, O man of God.
Ah, Elisha talking. Who's Elisha?
Talking to the woman that was barren.
Right.
Shunammite woman.
Shunammite.
And all she wanted was a kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but she's worried about it, huh? Here Sarah's listening. She doesn't think it's happening. This woman here, you know, she doesn't want to, you know, get hung out to dry. You know, she got a fear built in. It's not going to happen, right? Fear built in here. Sarah had a doubt built in.
Well, Sarah had a right to have a doubt built in.
Oh, this woman in the same position. This woman's in the same position.
Would they specify age on this?
No. No, the Shunammite, no. I was actually reading it yesterday.
But she's got a problem. She's barren. Big problem, barren.
It is a problem.
Barrenness is a big problem here. And Miriam's going to have a big problem, too. She's engaged. You know, one guy barren, one guy too old, one guy engaged. Nobody can have a kid in those states. If they do, they're in trouble. Sure enough, here we are. So that's 2 Kings 4:16. And again, we're talking about creation, child ex nihilo, saving faith. Now,
the pattern's already there. It's really not ex nihilo. The pattern's already been established.
Ask that woman about that.
Her pattern's already established. She knows it can happen.
Hey, every card has been established already. David, all you got to do is read the right verse, and I can tell you everything that's happening in your life, all the cards.
I'm saying
it's all established.
The pattern's already there. It's actually from Genesis 1, the pattern's already there. Okay?
Well, the patterns are in your life, too. They're all there. There's nothing new under the sun. They told you that in Ecclesiastes. Go read Kohelet. It's about everybody's pattern here. Now, Luke 1:31.
Behold, thou shalt conceive in thy womb and bring forth a son and shalt call his name Jesus.
Here it is saving faith again. You're going to have ex nihilo. This time God's going to be the father. He didn't do that to Sarah. He didn't do that to the Shulamite woman. But he personally showed up to Abraham, and now he's personally involved in this with the Malach Adonai, the angel of the Lord, and saying, call him.
So
Yod Hey Vav Hey saves,
so
you know?
What we're saying is the Lord interrupts.
There's an intervention going on here.
Himself.
Now, there's an intervention here. So we got saving faith personified here. And I can show you a lot more in terms of the pattern. Let's go back to Exodus, Genesis 15, just for a second. You know, all these people have to deal with fear. Look at the 15:1. Abraham with the saving faith. Read it out loud. 15:1.
What verse again? 15:1 of Genesis?
Yeah. Somebody.
After this, the word of the Lord came to Abraham in a vision. Do not be afraid.
No, it came to Abraham. Don't say Abraham.
Abraham. I am your shield, your very great reward.
But what did he say first? Did he say fear not?
Mm-hmm. Do not be afraid.
See, old Abraham with the saving faith. And this is five verses away from what Paul's quoting. The angel shows up and says, fear not. So you got the angel and you got the fear not deal. Look at verse 4.
Well, that's because Abraham did not know if the angel came in as a friend or a foe.
It doesn't matter what it is. It's a pattern. It's a card. Verse 4.
But the word of Adonai came to him, this man would not be your heir. No, your heir would be a child from your own body.
Well, there's news. This is saving faith when you believe it. Creation ex nihilo. From your 99-year-old body, and right now your 70-year-old body, but it's in the future. See? It's like it's going to drive you crazy. You haven't had a kid. Your wife is old. And they're telling you it's going to happen. And you believe it.
So there's hope even when you get old.
That's the point about saving faith. It's never too late. Get that straight. Now, a lot of people think it's never too late. And you know what I say to that?
You mean it's too late?
You haven't been tested yet. Because as soon as you think it's too late,
right,
then you're going to fear. And the minute you fear, now you're ready for God to do something. Until then, you're a smart guy. You think you know what's going on. And guess what? You think the story is about what you believe. You're an idiot. Idios.
Yeah. I wonder.
Because God's going to wait until it's too late. You know, everybody's sitting around there watching Boston, and after they lost the third game, everybody wrote them off. Goodbye, I'm done saving faith. I went, ha ha.
And the miracle.
Boston starts winning. I go, those suckers could win 8 straight right now. Nobody's ready for it.
And they did.
I didn't believe it.
Miracle.
I didn't believe it. Curse, 1918. Oh, reverse the curse. From curse to first. Boom. This is what saving faith is about. That's how it happens. And it happens when everybody's convinced that it can't happen, ain't happening, never happened, won't happen. Now they're ready. Because the kingdom of light, you got to have light. And you have light now when you think you know what's going on. When you think you know what's going on, what kind of humility do you have?
Yeah.
What is humility? What is meekness? What is meekness?
Bound to what God says, nothing else.
Listen.
Say
it out loud.
Not being overly impressed with your own sense of self-importance.
Not being overly impressed with your own sense of self-importance. Every time you're overly impressed with your own sense of self-importance, like, I'm smart enough to know now that, you know, Boston lost 3 games, so they're out. That's real good, you know? The story's about God. And he's writing the script, and it's rigged. And you know, it's rigged to make you fear. It's rigged to make you not believe. It's rigged so the impossible occurs. And saving faith is when the impossible occurs. And the impossible has to occur when it's impossible. And when it's impossible, you know it can't happen. That's when it's going to occur. hanged. Now, we're dealing with saving faith here. Let's look at Luke, Miriam, and what they're going through. Let's read verse 26, Luke 1, verse 26. Now, we got redemption playing out, the redemption theme. Israel's going to be sold into slavery later, right? And then we're going to be pulled out of big house, and we're going to have a nation out of nowhere. That's redemption. We were stuck in big house. We were 400 years. We're not getting out. God told us to be 400 years. He told Abraham. We don't care. We're not getting out. Why are we not getting out? They're killing people. They're killing our kids. Moses lived out. Now Moses doesn't want the job. This is perfect. This is what it takes. And then he pulls you out. Oh, no. Give him 10 signs and wonders. Have him, no, pay no attention to it. Stop beating up Moses while you're getting saved. Good. That's, you're really moving on saving faith now. This is the way it hurts. This is the way it occurs. And now you're dealing with being brought back to light from the kingdom of darkness. Well, we're all peons down here. We're in the kingdom of darkness, and darkness is ruling everywhere. And we're getting pulled out of the light. And it's like, you don't see the light. I don't see the light. Nobody sees the light. Israel's going down the tubes. We're all eating it. It's survival. We can't believe it. This is good. There's only a few of us, the churches, the synagogue. Yeah, that's good. We're living in the kingdom of darkness because everything is falling apart. Good. That's when saving faith comes around. It comes ex nihilo, out of nowhere. And the impossible occurs. And it believes God can do it because he said he's going to do it. You don't know the way he's going to do it. Abraham didn't know the way he was going to do it. He knew the way he was going to do it after he sinned. Before that, he didn't know nothing. But he believed him.
That's because of who we are.
Yeah, well,
it's not because it's not there or it isn't always there.
Yeah, but we haven't changed.
We are.
Each generation is as stupid as the one before. Each generation gets the card, and they're as dumb as the guys before, and they play it the same way because they think they're the first guys to get this card because they got no understanding because they don't dwell in the mood of the word and they don't live it. And there is we. Verse 26, Luke 1.
So you're saying that all the cards are already been dealt, so all the
cards have been played and played properly by people already. We've already had major win things happen. It's already happened. And all we got, the Exodus, we came out, and the next one's going to be better than the first. Well, it's built on the first. We're going to be singing the same songs, different things will get played out. It's happened before. And all of these are done deals. There's nothing new under the sun, it's just... It's for you now. Except, you know, how do you fit into the same drama?
But we need to figure them out.
And we got to live it. And if we don't live it, and they lived it, and they were terrified and screwed up, and now we're terrified and screwed up. Yeah, that's right. Verse 26.